Are you ready for a massive mindshift experience? This is the Mental Cement Podcast with your host, Candace Kelly.
What's up, friends? I'm Candace Kelly. Thank you so much for joining us back at Mental Cement, your place to be for all things money. But we also try to keep it a little funny because nobody wants to be bored when they're talking about making that moolah, okay? And so if you missed last week, be sure to tune in to that episode because that was the foundation for today's conversation. And so if you're listening to this around the time that it's premiering in July 2020, you know that Hamilton has just premiered on Disney Plus. Now, I gotta admit, I was a little nervous to watch it. I remember when it was so popular, when it came out on Broadway, it swept everyone away. It was so popular. And so I was like, oh, I don't know if I wanna watch it. What if it's not as good? Guys, trust me, do this favor for yourself. Watch Hamilton. Amazing story. And what's cool is that it talks about something so boring in like a nice hip hop way. And so if you know me at all, you know that got my gears turning. That got me thinking, we're gonna do a money rap. So tune in, get comfy, here we go. Making money's not a magic or a mystery. I break it down, make it easy like it's supposed to be. Delete the debt and you gotta raise a credit score. No more broke, gift in pocket, no we never poor. Cause we gotta correct the poverty mindset to cash the checks and coke moolah. So we can sip on margaritas by the poolah and have expensive conversations with our jeweler. Cause there's money in the bank, it's time to think about how much you hate your job and give yourself a pep talk in the parking lot every morning to force yourself to go into the god-awful place one more time just to avoid that one coworker that's always like, how was your weekend? And you gotta be like, oh, it was great! You know you didn't do a damn thing except put some clothes in the washing machine, but then you had a little bit of wine and fell asleep before you could put it in the dryer, so now you're rewash them. Okay, I'm done. I'm so sorry. I won't do that again. I'm clearly not Lin-Manuel Miranda at all. Let's just get into today's episode, and please don't tell anyone I did this. Day job because there are no record labels in my future, unfortunately. But what there is in my future is potentially a lot of money, which I want for you too. So quick recap of last week, right? We talked a lot about money in terms of sex. And the reason is because according to a friend of mine, Dr. Ted Klontz, who is the author of several books and really one of the pioneers of this space that fascinates me so much, is called financial psychology, or you may have heard it being called behavioral economics or behavioral finance. What that means is it combines psychology and the study of financial matters, the study of investing, to look at a lot of the financial advice that we give people assumes that we're rational, that we follow all the rules, that we never make mistakes, that we're just like robots, or what economist Robert Thaler calls econs, right? Where we just do everything perfectly on paper. But what's on paper versus what people actually do is so different. And that's because we have a thing called a brain. We make things called mistakes. We have things called emotions. And all of those things play a part in how successful we are in not only following a financial plan, but having beliefs that will set us up to be successful financially. And what's really cool is he has validated something that I've always felt was true, was that money isn't something that is often talked about, which is part of the problem. So here's a clip from an interview that I did with him in season one of Mental Cement, where he's explaining this phenomenon.
What I realize and what our research has shown is that money is more taboo than your sexual behavior. If you came in to talk to a therapist or whatever, you would, and I said, well, give me your sexual history, you would probably do that. If I said, tell me how much money you make, it's like, whoa, I'm not going there. And which just shows the power that money has. I mean, our beliefs about money and how much control it has over us and all that. And What I found was some very simple things that I captured when I was really little. And it was my parents and grandparents' attitude about people who had money, which is not good. They were not good people. They were not like us. And they took advantage of people like us. That's how they got wealthy. And so that's what I grew up in, that environment. And subconsciously, I thought, and I knew how they felt about them. So I never really wanted to become one, because I'd be thrown out of the family, right? Mm-hmm. So I just made sure that I struggled right along with everybody else, and that made me normal.
I just struggled along with everyone else, and that made me normal. What a powerful statement, my friends. I mean, how many times in our lives have we been in school and we know the answers to a test or a question, but we know our friends don't, and we don't want them to tease us for being the brainiac or the smart one or the teacher's pet, so we act like we're confused or we don't know, but we know, right? We know what it is. We've done that all the time at school or at work or in a family environment where we don't want to be the only one with some information, the only one with a belief system. It's just hardwired into our brains, guys. We don't like to feel alone. That's one of our biggest fears, because back in the old days, you know, if you were alone, if you were banished from your tribe, that means you were dead. You were eaten by a tiger or something. You were somebody's lunch. We are stronger together as a unit. And the funny thing is that, especially Americans, right, we preach the lone wolf, the stand on your own, the if all your friends jump off a cliff, are you gonna jump? Well, psychologically speaking, you're probably more likely to at least consider it, because you're like, well, I mean, I guess they're all right. They're all down there. But we do this in our finances all the time, right? We do it all the time. Well, everyone else is going on vacation. They invited me. You know you can't afford it, but you don't want to seem like you're broke or you can't afford it. Or, you know, no one else is really saving money, so it doesn't seem like something that is important, because you figure these people, maybe they're smarter than me or they're older than me, or they just must know what they're doing. So I'm just going to do what they're doing. But studies have shown time and time again that most people, that normal is not where you want to be. Most people don't know what they're doing when it comes to finances.
A new survey from Bankrate.com found that 3 out of 4 Americans have a financial regret. Of those surveyed, 56% say their regret is savings related.
The 2017 survey by Go Banking Rates found that most millennials ages 18 to 24 have less than $1,000 in their savings account, while nearly half had nothing saved at all.
To a recent Fed survey, 46% of us don't have enough money to cover a $400 emergency. God. I don't believe that, James. I'm sorry, but $400, half the population of America can't get together $400. Are you kidding?
He's not kidding, friends. And the sad part is, depending on your zip code, gender, or race, your likelihood of understanding the process to build wealth can dip dramatically, my friends. And I ain't about that, right? I'm not a fan of that. I believe that in 2020 especially, it's time for us to up our game, friends. Up our game. So that's what I'm here for. That's what we're going to talk about today. Today, you are going to learn what is the main reason that you are struggling to understand finance and build wealth. What are your psychological tendencies, meaning your beliefs that are influencing the behaviors that you're taking that end up being detrimental to your financial health? And of course, what can we do about it, right? What is your immediate next step? That by the time this podcast ends, you got a game plan, my friend. So let's go ahead and dive in.
Let's get it started in here.
So first, let's just start with unpacking what this means. Why does it matter what you believe if we're talking about money? Well, as Dave Ramsey likes to say, finance is 20% head knowledge, 80% behavior. Right? It's only 20% about what you know. And most of the time we focus on, let me learn the tricks, let me learn the tools, let me learn this, let me learn a new strategy that's working. But you can know what to do and still not do it, right? Just like with dieting. We know that I probably should eat a salad, but that don't mean you're going to eat no salads. That means you're probably going to eat a burger and maybe put some lettuce on it and pretend it's a salad, I've done it. I know you've done it, right? We're all people here. And so it's the same with money. Like, you know what to do. Most of us have enough understanding to be able to make a positive change in our lives. Most of us already know. You already have enough knowledge in your head right now, to be able to make good financial decisions. And if you don't, if you're saying, Candace, I don't even know, like, why saving is important, go back, listen to episode one. It breaks it down for you. It gets a little steamy, but as long as you can handle a little hot and heavy, you'll get it. So most of us have the head knowledge. It's the behavior that we really want to change. But how do you change behavior in humans? Well, behavior stems from beliefs. It's something that psychologists call the confidence competence loop. So let me give you an example. Have you ever met a kid who loves video games, right? My brother is a video game junkie, my little cousin, they love those things. I don't get them. The only thing I like is Sims, because I like to play God a little bit. But they love, like, sports video games. And have you ever seen a kid get a new game, right? A new one that they're not used to playing? What do? They put it in there, and they just start challenging you. They start mouthing off, oh, yeah, this is great. Oh, okay, this is great. And deep down, you probably know, like, this kid doesn't know what they're doing. But the kid doesn't know that, right? They say, oh, this is a video game. I've played video games before. I know how to play video games. I believe that I have the ability to figure this out, right? And so because of that confidence, they go start pushing all these buttons and looking in the settings and looking up cheat codes, right? They seek out information that will help them get better with the game. They start playing the game over and over, and they may lose the first couple rounds, like, oh man, it's because I didn't have this cheat code on, and I need to adjust this, and let me ask my friends about this, and they get real into it. And after a few days, they probably really are a master at the game. And how did that happen? They started not knowing, but because they believed in their ability to figure it out, they were able to seek out more information about how to get better. They practiced what they learned. They were able to incorporate the feedback and continue to improve. And so because of their confidence, they gained more competence, which then increased their confidence. Because if you know what you're doing, you're going to feel more confident about doing it. And so children naturally know this process, right? They'll talk a big game, or they'll, yeah, I can do this big slide. I can do these monkey bars. I can do this. Right. And then they keep trying and they fail and keep trying and failing. And they don't see it as failure. They just know that if they keep going, they're going to figure it out. But a lot of times as adults, what we do is it works in reverse, too. So if you believe that, yeah, I'm not really that good at math. Right? It's a common belief most of us have. It's a FTD, financially transmitted dumb idea. But a lot of us have that idea that I'm not good at math. And so if you tell yourself, I'm not good at math, how likely are you, if you encounter a math problem that you don't understand, how likely are you to research it, ask for help, ask your friends, try different ways to solve it, even though you might not get the wrong answer? Probably it's going to go down. And so if you're already not confident, you're not taking behaviors that will help you gain more knowledge, then the likelihood that you're going to continue to feel confident, it goes down. So then you go and you take the test on it, or you try to solve the problem, you don't get it right. You see, I told you I wasn't good at math, right? It reinforces what you already believed. And studies have shown time and time again in the field of psychology that our life is a reflection of our beliefs. Let me say that again. Our life is a reflection of our beliefs. So if you believe that I am not good at math, you will take the action, you will see the signs, right? You will collect the information as evidence that supports what you believe. Why does this matter in terms of money? Because if you have poverty beliefs, you're going to get poverty, you're going to take poverty actions to get poverty results. But if you have wealthy beliefs, you will then take wealthy actions, you will meet wealthy people, you will study wealthy information to eventually, over time, get the results of wealth. And I'll let Ted Klontz explain it even better in the interview I did with him.
So there's an imaginary zone. If you think about the ceiling being as much wealth as a person could ever gather and the floor as little as anyone would have, we have an artificial zone in there that we feel comfortable in. And it comes from where we came from. So if I came from a lower socioeconomic background, so that's my comfort zone. And if I go start touching the top of that and go above it, I start feeling uncomfortable saying, what will people think? They're going to put me in that category. And also, I'm going to have to make decisions I don't have to make now. If I don't have anything, I don't have to give anything. But now if I have more than I need, and you're my sister, and you've got cancer, you know, what am I going to do? Say, I'm sorry you got cancer. I'm sorry you don't have any money. Because then I really am an outcast. And then I have to find a whole new tribe to belong to. And that pressure is very powerful. And in that comfort zone, everybody sort of believes the same thing about money. And in order for me to get out of that comfort zone, I've got to change my beliefs about it. Because the people who have a lot more money, they think different than I do about money. And the people who have a lot less than I do, they think different. So I'm going to have to change my belief system.
So what is that belief system? What is it that we believe, and how does that influence our relationship with money? Let's dive into the specifics. So I'm going to go through the four money identities and explain in detail what they mean, what do you believe, what are some of the common actions that you take, how would this play out in your life, and what will that path look like if you were to stay on that path in the future? All right. And so if you're confused about this, there's a link down below. I call it the Money Identity Quiz, where you can actually take the quiz yourself. It's only a few questions, about 15 questions, and you'll be able to tell what yours is. So that way, when we're going through, you'll know which one that you closely identify with. So there's four different identities, and I break them up depending on two variables: how much money you make, your income, and how much money you spend, your spending habits. And so I define a low income as under $100,000 a year, under six figures, and a higher income would be at or above $100,000 a year. So the first personality type that we're going to talk about is one that I call the hustler.
Every day I'm hustling.
So a hustler is the most popular money identity out of all four. Right? So most people fit into this category. And if you're in this category, your belief, and when I say the word belief, I mean just your version of common sense, right? So if you think of money, this is what you think of as common sense, or like, yeah, everybody knows that, or something that's just true. Like, you don't sit around and say, this is my money belief, but it's just something that feels very true to you. Like, if someone says something that goes against it, you're like, they probably don't know what they're talking about. Because this is something that is true to you about money. And so your belief system tells you that, you know what, the key to being successful is hard work. I need to put in the sweat equity. I need to grind. I need to figure out what I can do in order to take care of myself and my family. And so this doesn't mean it in a negative way, right? I'm not talking about like you're out here, you know, slinging drugs or, you know, selling illegal things or, you know, whipping people off or being sleazy. It doesn't mean any of that, right? Genuinely a hardworking person who is going to do what they can to provide for themselves and their families. And so if you're in this group, you believe that when I get my paycheck, the first thing I need to do is pay my bills. I need to make sure that I have a stable environment in which to live. So I'm paying all my bills. Then after my bills are paid, I can treat myself. I can do the things that I want to do. I can do the things that I deserve to do because I'm putting in so much work. You may be working overtime. You may have more than one job. You also may use debt as a tool to cover your everyday expenses. So if you're short on cash, you may put the groceries or the gas on a credit card. Or you may use payment plans if there's something that you want, but you can't afford to pay for it all at one time. And you pay things on time, you're diligent about paying the bills, but that's pretty much the extent of your financial knowledge and financial planning. And you say, anything that I have left, that's my money, right? That's for me to do what I wish. You may treat your friends when you go out. You may get gifts for others. You really find joy in spending money on other people because you're a kind person. You love the community aspect. You love having that close-knit circle behind you. And even at work, you are a hard worker, but you may not ask for a promotion or you may not ask for a pay raise because you feel that your work should speak for itself and that once you have done a good job, that someone will see it and then come and validate you and offer it to you if they see that potential in you. The reason that this is the most common money identity is because usually if you fall into this category, you didn't have any sort of financial education. You had to figure it out through trial and error. You had to learn on your own. Once you got your first paycheck, that's really when your education started because you said, okay, now I have to figure out what to do with this money. Where to pay the bills, how to pay the bills, what to do with what's left. Do I start saving? Do I invest? What do I do? And you had to figure it out as you went. And so no one explained the difference between interest that is paid to you and interest that you pay. No one explained the importance of having a budget to make sure that you have enough money to meet all of your goals, your long-term goals, not just your short-term goals. And so usually you had to get your financial information through trial and error, through your friends, your community, the people closest to you, kind of watching and seeing what they were doing with their money, and from the media, from what you're seeing on TV, online, on podcasts like this, on YouTube videos. And we know that that can be a lot of information to dig through. And so what can happen is one day you look up and you're like, oh my God, I have so much credit card debt. I don't have any savings. My bills keep going up and my income staying the same. Like, what is happening? What am I doing wrong? I thought that I was doing all the right things, but now it looks like I'm never going to be able to reach my financial goals that I set. I'm not going to be able to afford to buy this house or to get this new car or to go on these vacations that I want to do or to retire because of all this debt and I don't have the right resources to help. So the biggest strengths of a hustler is their work ethic. They're willing to work hard. That's one of their values, is working hard to get what they want. But their biggest challenge is that they may not be working smart, working strategically to make sure that they won't have to keep working so hard, multiple jobs, overtime, getting burnt out, not having time to do what they want to do every single day. And so what they can do is get an education in finances. And it may not sound fun, and their initial reaction, if you're a real hustler, your initial reaction to hearing the word budget is like a little bit of a gag reflex. Like, I don't know. I don't want restriction. I don't want someone telling me what I can and can't do with my money. But really, it's about providing you the freedom to really be independent, where you can leave a job that you don't like, where you don't have to feel like you just have to spin on this little hamster wheel and run your little face off to never really be able to afford the lifestyle that you desire. Because you're a dreamer, my friend. I know you. I know you have these goals and these visions and the aspirations that you want for your life. And right now, your current financial habits aren't allowing you to do that. And the biggest thing that you believe is, yeah, but I just need more money. I'll budget when I have more money. But that is not true, my friend. I promise you, there are people out there making half as much as you that still find a way to save, even if it's $1, $10, $20 a month. Get into that habit of paying yourself first before you pay all of your bills, before you pay everybody else. You work for that money, so you should get some of it in case you have an emergency, right? Because everyone else is becoming a priority over you, even your friends. Right? Even treating them and going and doing the things that you love, it is hindering you from reaching your destination. And that stops now. So down below, what I've done is I've created a full PDF checklist, cheat sheet, spreadsheet that goes through exactly the beliefs, the behaviors. How are you at work? How do you act in a social setting, right? What's your background? What are your values as a hustler? Because first, you have to become aware of those beliefs like I was talking about, because you just think it's true. You just think that, no, I really just, all I need is more money. Like, I hear you, but that's what will solve my problem. And until you understand how you really operate, where did you get these ideas from about money, right? We talked about it in the last episode of going through doing that exercise of what do I think is true? Where did I first hear that, right? Where did I get that idea from? How do I know what I'm doing is working? Because if you have more debt than you have in savings, then you probably have some room to improve. And that's okay, right? That's okay. It's okay to know that you have room to improve. It doesn't invalidate any of the other things that you've accomplished. Because dang, you've done so much. You've done so much. Look at where you come from versus where you are now. I know you're not quite where you want to be, but you've done a darn good job. Isn't it time to finally start doing something for you? Finally start to get a little better, get a little smarter, grow a little bit. I got you, my friend. So that link is down below. So that's a hustler, right? In a nutshell, earn less than six figures, so low income, but high spending. But it comes from a good place, right? It's just misguided because you've never been taught. And it's not fair to say someone is, you know, ignorant of money or, you know, they're lazy. That's not true at all. And that's not fair. You just haven't been taught. So now it's time to understand what makes you tick. How do you think about it? Where'd you get these ideas from? So we can start to change it and start to incorporate those wealthy beliefs, those wealthy habits in order to start getting those results. So let's move on to the second type. This is the baller. A hustler all grown up, right? Everything a hustler dreams of, that's what a baller is. They have the same money beliefs and behaviors. They just make more of it. So they have higher income and also higher spending. So these would be the people who are professional athletes where they might make $1 million a year and they might spend $950,000 a year, right? And so they're able to afford many more luxuries than the average person. Their income is sky high, but they still may have issues with debt and they still may be struggling to pay their bills every month. And I think that's harder for us to imagine because, again, most people are hustlers and they assume more money will fix the problem. But there are so many examples of people who make a lot and they spend almost all of it too. The biggest strength of a baller is that they know how to make money. If you're a baller, you understand how to create income. You may even have multiple streams of income that are coming in. You may be a business owner. You may be an athlete, an entertainer. You may work at a higher level in your field than most. And so you've mastered that skill set. But because you master that skill set, you also believe that it doesn't really matter what you spend because you could just work a little harder and make some more. You know how to generate that income. So you never have a feeling of that this may be your peak. You never think about, well, maybe if the economy changes or my industry changes, I may no longer be able to make this high a salary. And because your spending is so high, you may also be using debt or you may also not have much saved for later to really be able to maximize that money to not only make wealth for you, but generational wealth. Right? That's one of the things that Mental Cement strives to educate people on is generational wealth, not just to be rich, not just to be wealthy, but to have money that keeps going and growing down your family line. That's really the golden ticket, right? That's the key to really changing your life and changing society. And so you want to start thinking in those terms. Now, the biggest belief difference between a hustler and a baller, right? A baller knows how to make more money, but also they may start to have some internal dissonance about making so much money. They may be the wealthiest person in their immediate family or in their friend group, in their circle. And so they may start to feel a little alone, a little self-conscious that they can't relate to other people, that other people can't relate to the issues that they're having. That if they do talk about money struggles, people kind of laugh it off and think, oh, well, you know, it's not a problem for you because you make six figures. You make this amount. You know, we know that you must be doing well. And you may not feel as comfortable seeking the help that you really need because you feel that you're going to be judged or that others won't understand you. And you also may feel responsible to take care of those around you that may have less income. And you may feel like you have to pay bills for others, or you have to give them these expensive gifts or give them cash allowances because you feel like, well, they're your friends, they're your inner circle, they're your group, they're the people that you trust the most out of everyone. But that can also put you in a tricky situation where you can feel like you're just looked at as a cash cow and you're not really seen as the person that you are. And that can make you a little bit resentful. And you may subconsciously start doing things just to get rid of the money because it's not helping you in the way that you thought it would. One of the biggest misconceptions that people have about ballers from the outside looking in is that they are rich, that they've made it, that they have mastered financial success. And that's usually because they tend to have a lot of stuff. They have big houses. They have nice cars, right? Their kids may go to private schools. They may be able to afford very nice vacations. But if you were to really dig deep and open up all of their checkbooks and their histories and look at their bank statements, they may be just as underwater as the average hustler is. It's just they owe more bills on a bigger scale. I'll never forget one time a mentor of mine was telling me that, you know, you look around and you try to assume how well people are doing by their stuff. But if you look at someone's house, the more stuff they have, usually the more bills they have, right? The bigger income they have, usually the larger amount of debt that they have that they owe. So you may be a hustler and you may be $10,000, $20,000 in debt and feel overwhelmed and feel like you don't know what to do. And you feel, oh, if I only get more money. And so you work hard and over your career, you start to earn more, you start to get above that six-figure mark, and you start to live the lifestyle you want to live. And then you look at your debt and you're over $100,000 in debt. And then you really start to feel nervous, right? So sometimes what can happen is that you'll have all the markings of success, but deep down, you're still nervous about money. You still don't really understand it. And you're still just on that rat race of, well, now I got to get more. Now I got to get more because I don't have enough yet to save. I still don't have enough to pay this debt off. And you're just going to go down this never-ending cycle. And that's not what we want for you. So the biggest opportunity that a baller has is they actually have one of the money gears figured out. Remember, there are three money gears. We talked about them in the last episode. You learn how to earn money, right? That's the first gear. And they've mastered it, right? They've proven that they can do this successfully. So now they only have two gears to worry about, which is learning how to save and manage money and then invest and grow it. And so they need to focus on gear number two. And the faster they can start to save, man, they're going to have so much money to play with, to grow with, to really make an impact a lot faster. So that's the opportunity for them. Now, the third money personality type is actually the one that I identify with. And this type is called Pennywise.
A penny saved is a penny earned. In no time at all, it will be our turn. Life's not easy, nothing is free. We got jobs and responsibilities. Gas for the car and butter for the bread. Shoes for the feet and blanket for the bed. Boat for the light and pill for the pain. Milk for the baby and roof for the rain. For the rain.
Someone who identifies as Pennywise usually has a low income, so under six figures, but they also have a low amount of spending, right? They save a lot. They save a lot. And this is something that I think is often overlooked when we talk about finances because we like to talk about ballers. We like to talk about hustlers. We like to talk about the fourth type, which we'll talk about next week. But very often do we highlight the people who may make a modest salary, but they save a bunch, right? A bunch of money. And there's whole different acronyms and communities, and we can get into all that. But the basic idea is that those who are penny wise, they usually understand finances. They've learned somehow that there's an advantage to being thoughtful, to being meticulous, to understanding how to save. They are the extreme couponers, the people who search for deals everywhere, the people who love to shop on clearance, the people who will, you know, wear out their shoes until there's holes at the bottom, but even though they could afford to buy new ones, but they would choose to spend the money in investing and in saving. and do other things with their money. And so the key difference is really the way that money is thought about. So when a baller or hustler first gets their check, their first thought is, let me pay all my bills, and then let me focus on what I want to do, which sounds reasonable, right? But Pennywise take it a step further. The first thing that they do when they get their bill is they pay themselves first. They focus on their savings goals or investing goals first. And this may be in the form of automation, right? They may have it set up to where a certain amount automatically gets transferred. Or if you're like me, you like the game of moving it over. How much can I save this month, right? They have an exact number amount that they know for each paycheck is going to go towards savings or investing goals. And this is a key difference in the way that it's thought about. And it doesn't matter how much money you have. I told you this is the one that I identify with the most because when I got my very first job, when I was in college, I worked as a resident advisor. And this was my first time getting a steady check. I'd done some babysitting, worked with kids over the summer, but it was very short term. So this was throughout the whole year in college for a few years. And my check was very small. It was only $200 each paycheck, right? But they paid for housing and had other advantages. But on the surface, it wasn't that much money. But because I was in college, most of my other expenses were paid for. I didn't have that many expenses. And so I always saved at least half, if not 75%. So I put automatically $100 into my savings and usually around 150 in the savings. And then I say, cool, I got $50 I can spend if we're going out. Once I turn 21, if I want to go have drinks or whatever, that would be my fun money to do with what I wish. And it grew, it accumulated to, by the time I got to my senior year, I wanted to start investing in coaching and learning about mental health and psychology. And I wanted to take this coaching course. And this was a big deal for me, but the coaching course was $3,000 and I had enough money where I could pay for it outright. And I got to fly all across the country to go to these seminars and workshops because that's what I knew I wanted to do with my career. And I was able to afford to do that because I'd just been saving. At the time, I didn't know what for, but I just knew that was an important principle to me. Right? And even through getting my first job, you know, it's an hourly job. It wasn't something that is paying a lot, but every time I get the check, I know save some first. And I plan ahead of time how much I want to save. And when I'm shopping, I say, okay, how can I get my groceries down $10 less this week? How can I get my gas a little bit cheaper? How can I find this entertainment activity at an affordable rate? Pennywise people are, as the name suggests, they're a little bit of penny pinchers, but it's fun to them. It's not restrictive. They're not doing something that makes them feel like they can never go out and have a good time. And I know for myself, I love to hang out with friends. I love to socialize, but I don't often go out to like a bar or restaurant. I'll say, hey, why don't you guys come over to my place and I'll make some food here. And usually it's like breakfast food or pasta, something that you can make for like $10 and feed a nice crowd. And you still have the same time. You still have a blast, but you're able to do it for half, if not a fourth of the cost. And so we're always thinking and calculating. We're very meticulous when it comes to the numbers. It's a fun thing. It's like a game. And we have a plan for our finances. So if that sounds like you, you're probably this type. And if that sounds like the exact opposite of fun, this may not be you. And so the biggest advantage that Pennywise people have is that they're usually able to avoid debt or pay it off quickly, and they're able to save at a faster rate. Now, the biggest thing that they could work on, right, the biggest challenge is, like we talked about, they usually don't have that high of an income. So they mastered the money behaviors necessary, right? They've got gear number two, which is the hardest one to master, which is learning how to save, understanding financial principles. They got that down. And now what they can focus on is gears one and three, which is earning more, right? Learning how to make a higher income and investing, because then they can skyrocket their efforts and build wealth a lot faster. So if you're still confused, right? We went through the first three. If you're still confused, down below, there are two things that will really help you out. The first is the money identity quiz. So this is just a few questions. It'll let you know which one of these you are and give you a little recap in case you've forgotten of what that means. How does that show up in your financial life? And then there's also the PDF that you can download that goes into even greater detail about the other types. So if you are a hustler, but you're like, you know what? That Pennywise thing sounds cool. What do they think that I don't think? How do they act in social situations? How do they act at work? What were their beliefs growing up, right? I have it all detailed, easy to follow, nice, clear, and concise in that PDF. So you can download that too to go with the quiz. So that way you can understand what are the differences in how I'm thinking and how I'm behaving, and how can I start to understand what maybe I might be missing that others understand that may be doing well. So we've gone through the first three, right? As a recap, in this episode, you have learned why some people tend to spend their money differently than others do. You've learned why you think the way you do about money and why you maybe never even questioned it, why it just seemed obvious. And we've understood that most people don't have a clear understanding of it, but that doesn't mean that there isn't time to learn. There's always time to learn something new. There's always time to get better and to grow with your understanding about it. And so we have those resources below. Go check them out if you haven't already. Next week, we're going to go over the fourth and final money personality, which is the mogul, right? And these are the people that have already or are on the path to building generational wealth. We're going to talk about why that's important. We're going to talk with some people who have done it, who can give you some tips, who can explain what their mindset is, what they were taught growing up, what is their normal, right? Biggest takeaway, if you want to change your behavior, get around an environment where your desired behavior is the normal behavior, where everybody's saving, where everybody's investing, where everybody makes a lot of money, right? That is how you can skyrocket your savings and begin to build that wealth. I'm Candace Kelly. I can't wait to hear you back here again next week for another episode of Mental Cement.
Tune in next week as we continue our journey towards mindset mastery. Thank you for listening to Mental Cement.